Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
Yes, we are burning down the house. What happened to David there? Wow, impressive. Burning down the house on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. Happy Mother's Day, all you mothers there. All around the United States, happy Hallmark holiday. I know some of you have divided thoughts about the institution of Mother's Day. Myself, I rather like Father's Day. But that's not what I wanted to talk about today. As a follow-up to last week's conversation with Theo Prudon of Docomomo, in which we briefly touched on the absurdity that is this phenomenon, and I really have to watch my words here because otherwise I'm going to disprove my own point. The thing of Archispeak, this ridiculous pseudo-language that our colleagues fall into, and thinking about Archispeak, and I'll give you some examples. Those of you who are civilians might find this amusing. Many of us in the profession find it absolutely disgraceful. I personally believe that the way that a lot of these high-profile architects carry on in their verbal and written communication actually do so to the detriment of our profession. And I think it's all of a piece, which will be topic two, of bad, famous architecture. For example, the new museum here in New York City on the Bowery is very famous, and I think it's a very bad work of architecture. I encourage any of you who are listening live to call in. That's in the United States, area code 718-497-2128. 718-497-2128. Before we go to the break, though, I did want to get, you know, kicking here with some examples of Archispeak. And whoever would like to call in, we can talk about Archispeak, and then we can talk about some of your favorite bad, famous architecture, because I think it's all of a piece. This is an essay that appeared about a year ago in Slate by Witold Rybczynski, who writes quite a lot about architectural things. It's called A Discourse on Emerging Tectonic Visualization and the Effects of Materiality on Praxis. What does that mean? We'll see. Witold goes in and he says, although the Ted Mosby character in How I Met Your Mother on television has a suitably tousled hairstyle and that is apparently clientless firm, has a trendy name, he doesn't have the mastery of the lingo of his trade, for architects, like all professions, have their own jargon. And while Ted speaks like an ordinary guy, a brief history is in order. Architecture, after all, is a relatively young profession. The American Institute of Architects was not founded until 1857, seeking to distinguish themselves from lowly builders and carpenters. architects adopted a specialized vocabulary, often substituting complicated Latin-based words for their simpler Anglo-Saxon equivalents. For example, fenestration for window, entrance for door, chamber for room, trabeation for beam, planar for flat, and then there were the mysteries of Ionic columns and egg and dart moldings, of course. When modernist architects revolutionized the art of building in the 1920s, they scrubbed classical decoration and classical terms. In the process of simplification that followed, language, too, was stripped down, and the pronouncements of architects such as Walter Gropius, Mies van der Rohe, and Le Corbusier were lucid and to the point. After all, if a house was a machine for living, then the housemaker should speak the straightforward language of the engineer. This changed in the 1970s, for on March 16, 1972, to be exact, the federal government dynamited the first of 33 buildings of the infamous Pruitt-Igoe public housing project in St. Louis. The destruction of the utopian Towers in a Park signaled the demise of heroic modernism and its idealistic foray into social engineering. It also rattled the profession. What were architects to do? A few, such as I.M. Pei, soldiered on, seeking inspiration in more monumental and stylish versions of minimal modernism. But some adopted postmodernism, which turned out to be a short-lived fad. A few turned back to classicism, while some, like Richard Rogers and Norman Foster, redefined architecture as an advanced technological craft. Other architects, especially those teaching, reacted to the collapse of modernism by attempting to reinvent the field as a theoretical discipline. The theories did not come from the evidence of the practice of architecture, as one might expect, but from arcane historical tracts and the writings of French literary critics in hermeneutics, poetics, and semiology. Thus began a new phase in professional jargon. For example, here's a brief primer on some words you may hear or read. Discourse, what architects talk about when they talk about architecture. Academy, usually the academy, where underemployed architects like Ted Mosby of How I Met Your Mother might work. Praxis, how theory is implemented, which in architecture means building buildings. Tectonic, also from the ancient Greek. Nothing to do with geology. It signifies, as far as I understand it, everything to do with building. A couple other examples. Gesamtkunstwerk. I have spoken of Gesamtkunstwerk. That comes from my having studied theater. Gesamtkunstwerk originates with Wagner, but really it just means designing the whole works from the doorknob through the building, through the furnishings. Materiality, or what buildings are made of, sounds a lot more impressive than bricks and sticks. Potentiality, spatiality, conditionality, functionality, modernity, when in doubt, add an itty or an ology. Ology, of course, means the study of something, but in architecture, methodology and typology just mean method and type. Visualization or representation are sketches or drawings. Instantiation. It means representing something by giving an example, which is a term borrowed from philosophy. Emerging, as in emerging trends. It's trends that are just around the corner, maybe. Metamorphosis, change, as in the metamorphosis of space is a flexible correspondence of space to its situation caused by certain external actions, or externalities, I suppose. And then we have the funny names of firms, MoForces, Ennead, and so forth. A couple of my favorites, aside from hermeneutics, which is the study of theory and the study of interpretation, are heuristics, which is a study of the shortest path from A to Z. Ontology, or ontological, the study of or the nature of being. I used to hear ontology all the time in architecture class. Typology, one of my favorites actually, and I'm guilty of this, is to refer to something as a topological inversion. What that really means is something's turned inside out. Listeners, call in. I'd like to hear from you. 718-497-2128. Let's have a little musical break. Burning Down the House on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm Curtis B. Wayne. Jack, do we have any call-ins?
We do have a caller.
Hey, cool. Excellent. Hello, this is Curtis.
Hi.
Hi. Thank you for calling in. Do you have any...
Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, great.
Yeah, I'm hearing you very well.
Can you hear?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, good. Could you come a little closer to your telephone? That would be great.
Sure. Is that better?
Oh, that's much better. Thank you. Are you a civilian or are you an architect?
I am an architect.
Excellent.
I'm calling from London.
Mm. Oh, super. Pip, pip and all that. I won't ask you how the weather is. I'm sure it's dark.
Yes, it is.
But it's... quite a beautiful day here in Brooklyn. You should drop by next time you're on this side of the pond. Do you have any favorite, examples of bad architectural discourse that you would like to share?
I was in New York a few years ago, and I saw the new museum.
The new museum. Oh, yeah, let's just jump right to that. That's fine. Yeah. What did you think?
Yeah. Well, I came there with a lot of anticipation. I heard a lot of discourse about the building, and I had actually friends that went there and visited the building. And I expected a great piece of architecture, and it actually wasn't.
No, it's not, is it?
Absolutely. There were certain things about it that I admired. I admired their attempt to talk about verticality in architecture by the form, but and that was the main thing that attracted me to actually go there. But upon arriving there, everything pretty much went downhill. I expected a nice spatial experience, and that was where my biggest disappointment lay. Yeah. In that it seems as though the thought and all the creativeness went directly into the external sculptural form, and what was left was just really there's nothing more to talk about beyond that.
You see that, you see this Sejima. Kazuyo Sejima, the lead architect of Sana, the architects who designed that, admittedly describes it as a careless pile of forms. I mean, and there's a famous photograph around that I've seen where she's holding. Well, first of all, she's got the crazy hair, which is more like performance art. Like Laurie Anderson circa 1979. All spiky. But she's holding a model or maquette of this museum in her hand, which says to me everything about turning absolutely a building into nothing more than just an object. That's the way she sees it. But
I saw that picture. Yeah, I actually know exactly what picture you're talking about.
Yeah, and she's on the beach, and she's looking at this little tiny maquette, and it speaks to me to a kind of a weird disconnect from the reality of building, that you're reducing buildings to something that can be sold in the gift shop, you know. I have a collection of tiny buildings. Whenever I go to a new city, I look to see what they have in the souvenir shop. So I have, of course, I have my tiny Eiffel Tower. I have for New York, my collection. I have a tiny Flatiron building. Do you know that building? It's on 23rd Street.
I know it very well.
You know, from the famous.
Do you have a little Statue of Liberty as well?
I have a Statue of Liberty. Yes. I have an Empire State Building. I have a Chrysler Building. I even have a tiny St. Patrick's Cathedral, which is wonderful. It's beautiful. But then I have, you know, I have other buildings from other places. And actually, when my children travel, I have standing orders to them to please bring me back a tiny building if you can. My daughter brought me a Sphinx from Egypt when she went there. But this objective, you know, not only making a building that's an object, but admitting that you're making a building an object, really, I think, leads to the potential that it's going to be a bad building, and I think the museum, the new museum, is a very bad museum. It's the experience of being in the museum is flat. There's no there, you know. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the experience of the museum is, it's just like any other museum in the world. I think it's a very timid design. There's no experimentation. There's no joy. I was looking to see how they resolve the detail. How did they relate to the space outside? How did they deal with? How did they resolve the interior with the exterior? And it felt just like a very kind of flat experience. The one thing I noticed when I got there that really defined the whole experience of the building was perhaps the security was the most important or the thing that left the greatest impression on me, is that it was so strong. And I believe that has a lot to say about the architecture. If I as a museum goer go into that building, and after experiencing the whole thing in its entirety, and coming and walking away from that thinking about the security, because it was so, what's the word? I think it was in your face. is the nature of the security. There were so many of them, and it really detracted from the experience of the art. And the architecture didn't really come up as a thing to kind of think about or to notice. It was just kind of dry and flat and blah.
Yeah, well, that,
for lack of a better word.
Yeah, that is one of the down. But I have so many thoughts. I have to pick one. What I don't understand is how these bad buildings become so acclaimed. I don't understand. When you were in New York, did you go down the street and see the Morphosis building at 41 Cooper Square?
Yeah, I went past it. I didn't get to go on the inside of it.
Yeah, speaking of security, but, the school won't let practically anybody
in
there.
That was also, yeah, it was a security issue. They only had, unfortunately, I was in New York for a few days, and they only had tours on Tuesday or Thursday. I forgot exactly what days it was, so, and they wouldn't make an exception.
Yeah, well, so, yeah, well, the thing about that strikes me is, aside from the shredded screen, the shredded and crumpled titanium screen that covers what's otherwise a really banal glass box. And by the way, I finally figured out that tear. It's a lowercase T that Tom Main has inscribed on the facade. It's a T. It's ripped into the facade, which I think is just absolutely stunning in its arrogance. But aside from that, what everybody seems to love, or at least theoretically in the architecture press, are those stairs inside, the allusion to the Spanish steps. But in reality, those steps don't work. The students don't sit on them. They're vertigo-causing because of the space. You stand at the top and you really feel like you're going to just tumble all the way down several floors. That to me is bad architecture. I do not think it is good architecture when you create a sense of terror. If you want terror, then go to an amusement park and take a roller coaster.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's so far away from the Vitruvian ideals of firmness, commodity, and delight, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go in and see it. But the thing that when I go to architecture, especially famous ones, I kind of go there with a sense of optimism and kind of openness towards it. And for example, with this Tom Main building, it's doing something different. And if you do something a little bit different, you have my respect. And I go in with an anticipation to see why, and then I'm going to be asking questions. And the question I ask myself when I see that building is why are these forms like that? And I see myself, even though I'm an architect, I kind of see myself as the everyday man. And I wonder why are these forms like that? And if I don't see the answer, then I get frustrated really quickly. It kind of feeds this kind of cliche about architecture, or famous architecture is this, you crumple up this paper and then you let it go, this Frank Gehry cartoon kind of idea of the famous architect. Perhaps there is a clear explanation as to why these forms are like that, but it's not quite evident, and it's kind of just a mystery to me. And I feel that kind of comes back to your original point about this kind of archy speak. I feel that it's kind of a way to alienate regular people from connecting with architecture. Yeah. Kind of set a higher plane and say, okay, if you don't understand it, then you're not intelligent enough.
Yeah,
Regular people are intelligent enough to talk about architecture.
Absolutely. It's to me, it's all about form, but there's no content. If you could stay on the line, I want to take a little bit of a break. Here's a little theme music to entertain us about all form and no content.
I met her in a club down in Old Soho, where you drink champagne and it tastes just like Coca-Cola. C-O-L-A-Cola. She walked up to me and she asked me to dance. I asked her her name and in a thought-from voice she said hello. Spine, oh my Lola, Lola, Lola.
Burning Down the House on heritageradionetwork.org. We have a caller. We're talking about famous bad architecture. Are you still on the line?
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. And thank you for calling in all the way from London. I know that we have a lot of listeners on the other side of the globe. Some of you blog about it. Apparently, we're very big in Helsinki, which is kind of cool. I like that. So, you know, here in the United States, we have some very good architecture, and we have some very famous, very bad architecture. Unfortunately, recently, track record is not so great in New York. The new One World Trade Center, originally sort of designed by Libeskind and then remodeled by SOM, is boring. It doesn't even look tall. It's just something about the shape. I was just downtown last weekend, and I had a look at it, and it was like, wow, that doesn't look very tall. I know in my mind that it's tall, but I look at it, and it's really kind of stumpy.
Is it still 1776?
Well, that's debatable whether it will officially be 1,776 feet tall, because they have reconfigured the spire to make it more easily maintained, and now it's just an antenna, and so the Council on Tall Buildings and Urban Habitation, the people who rank skyscrapers, are not so sure that actually it will qualify. So, in that case, it would be the world's third tallest after, North America's third tallest actual building. We're not talking about the CN Tower in Toronto, which is really just one big antenna, but rather it would be shorter, if the spire doesn't count, than the formerly Sears Tower, now Wills Tower in Chicago, and some other tall building, which escapes me at the moment. I'm a little distracted here, as is Jack, our poor engineer. They're having a tiki party on the adjacent part of the campus here. Our studio is in the garden of a hipster pizzeria here in East Williamsburg. And for Mother's Day, they're having tiki party. And so there's this head-banging disco beat, which, if you can't hear it in the background, good
I
for you.
It, yeah.
Yeah, it's distracting. So this will not be a traditionally 1 hour conversation. We'll wrap it up in a little bit. Well, now that you have a worldwide audience, is there anything that you'd like to talk about before we bid our adieus today? Any thoughts on Archie Speak? Yeah, you were mentioning Archie Speak. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and on the subject of music as well, is when I think of Archie Speak, I think of music, because if you compare music to art, I'm very much into the art scene, and when I look at art, and you can think about art and architecture kind of in the same light in this context.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they tend to alienate a large part of their audience, and if you think of music as an art form, you see that music does not alienate. It's such an inclusive art form. Everyone from the professors in music school to the everyday man in the street can have an opinion and talk about music, and I feel that as an art form, music is very successful in terms of communicating and being inclusive. And I think with Archie Speak and art, they're kind of in the same plane, that they exclude by using this kind of language that says, okay, we're just going to be a club and we're going to talk about things on a higher plane and if you're not up with us, then and if you don't understand, then to hell with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and my point is that alienation is the last thing that the profession of architecture needs right now. It doesn't make us any more cool. It just makes us, in fact, more irrelevant. That if we have ideas and we can't present them clearly, then who's going to be our audience? There's a very limited amount that could be accomplished by only speaking to ourselves. In the United States, there are only about 120,000 licensed architects. That's a minuscule portion of our population. I would suspect that the demographics are pretty much the same in any developed country. That's a tiny, tiny, tiny community. And if we're only speaking to ourselves in this weird way by borrowing terms from, from Derrida or... or any of the French New Wave literary critics, we've lost an opportunity to engage with the public, and if the public feels that we're disengaged, then the reason that there is such a profession as architecture perhaps becomes a dying art form. It's not just that there are a lot of naked emperors around, I think, but rather that nobody cares that they're naked anymore.
Good point.
And do you have any favorite Archie speak words that you would like to see abolished?
Oh. Yeah. Let me think. There's so many. Intervention. It's not such a bad
yes.
one, but that's the first one.
Oh, yes, intervention. Yes. Oh, absolutely. Oh, yes, I have a visceral response to intervention myself. I was at an event here in New York not so very long ago, yeah. And Anthony Viedler, the dean at my alma mater, Cooper Union, bumped into me, and he couldn't escape. He was backed into a corner, and he really didn't want to talk to me. But so instead, he just launched into, a speech that he'd been giving recently about how he was leading his students in studying an intervention for an urban space. And it was like, I felt like what he was trying to convey was the panache of planning a marine amphibious assault or something like that. As if to be a strap hanger on the new militarism in the West or something. Intervention. It's like locking up your best friend so that he gets over his drug addiction. It's a term that just smacks of arrogance that we know best. I was perhaps asleep or simply just tuned out to what had been going on in the so-called academy until a few years ago. I was at a student show. It was the end of semester work exhibition, and one of my former classmates, who is now a full professor of architecture, was showing some guests through the studios and said that the students vigorously attacked a robust program. And in my well-practiced sort of stage whisper, I asked, "Diane, did they use sidearms, or did you allow them to use utilize RPGs?" She really bristled at that. Strenuously attacked a robust program. Yeah.
It's really military.
Yeah, I mean, it's a perversion of the language, and it's I think it's time to return to the what Witold here puts in his essay, the plain speaking of high modernism. Just call it what it is, and then, like, I'm glad you brought up musical themes.
Yeah.
Musical reviewers do such a good job of talking about the music and the performance, which architecture critics, I think, would do well to attempt to emulate, to talk about the idea and the materiality of it, the reality of it, the material reality of the performance, of the execution of the idea. We don't see a lot of talk or dialogue, much less discourse, about ideas made real in the built environment, and that's what we're all about. And it's very sad. I don't know what the remedy is, but perhaps we should all congregate flash mob like at architectural lectures, and when someone uses a word like that, perhaps through derision, we could stop people from, or train them. Whenever they would say something like intervention, we should all break out in applause. Every time they use a buzzword, we should all just start cheering. Yay! Yay! It's archy speak. It's wonderful. I think it would be so much more effective than boos or hisses. Because it would be false enthusiasm, and I think sooner or later people would stop. If you're next in New York, please come out to the studio. You can introduce yourself and just say that you were the call-in guest on 13th of May, and we'll be happy to have you sit in here in our shipping container studios, and we can talk more about RG Speak and famous bad architecture. I think we've come to the end of what we can stand here in the tin cans here with the disco party going outside. I do thank you for calling in. Thank you, listeners, for listening.
Thank you for having me.
Keep the faith.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.